welcome. Thank you for coming. So we're going to play a song which is up there, and it's in Kirtan style. So we'll sing something, and then you try to sing something, and we'll try to sing something. And we'll see how it comes out. I don't know. Yeah, here we go. Right?
Krishna, Krishna.
Sometimes try to take his class in New York, and he kills me every time. But then when I heard he was teaching here, I was very excited, and we had a chance to come. And it was really nice. And then I ran into Ian and Vanessa. They said we had met in Hong Kong or something, I don't know, or something like that. And so we started talking, and I grew up in Phoenix about 100 years ago. And then spent many years in Tibetan monasteries, like 20 years. And then, you know, we do yoga also in Tibet. It's very similar to the Indian yoga. And we spend a lot of time working on the inner meaning of yoga. So I was trained, I don't know, we started in 1980 or something, working on the inner meaning of yoga. And then in the Tibetan system, it's the opposite. You first learn the inner meaning of yoga, and you learn the chakras and the inner body for a long time. And only after you've finished 20 years of study and examined, only after you've been examined, did they allow you to do asanas, did they allow you to do physical yoga. So it's kind of the opposite in Tibet. You learn the inside first, and then you learn the outside. So, you know, I have a funny story. I finished my study in 1995, and then we were... thank you. We don't do yoga in the monastery. You don't see yoga in the monastery. Yoga is considered very secret. The asanas are considered secret. So I was... I finished my degree, and then one of my teachers came to me. He's my logic teacher. He taught me logic. And this is big-time logic. This is with debating. I don't know if you've ever seen. It looks like karate. But you ask questions of people, and you dance, and then you scream at people. And we studied logic. He was our coach at the inter-monastic Olympics, you know. So... he came to me and he said, okay, now you've graduated, now you can start the secret teachings, Tantra. You're allowed to study Tantra after 20 years. And then I said, okay. And then he said, one of the first things we do in Tantra is we learn yoga exercises, yoga asanas. So I said, but we don't do yoga in the monastery. I've never seen anybody do yoga in the monastery. Then he gave me the standard Lama answer, which is that there's many things you haven't seen. I said, okay, well, who's going to teach me asanas, you know? And he said, I'm the asana teacher. I said, no, you're the logic teacher. He said, but I'm the secret asana teacher. And then he taught me asana in the Tibetan way. And then after a couple of years, they said, okay, now you're ready to do a three-year silent retreat. So I was in New York, and I thought, oh, I would like to learn some Western asana, you know, yoga as they do it in America. Because we're supposed to stay in a hut for 3 years. And I thought, mostly, we get to go out like once every couple months or something. But I thought, oh, I would learn some kind of Western style of exercise, and then that would help me in my retreat. So someone suggested I go to Jiva Mukti Yoga in New York, because they knew David Life and Sharon Gannon. And I'd heard about them, and then I was living in New York and teaching in New York at the time. And I said, well, I don't think I can go, you know. And they said, why? And they said, I said, well, you know, we're going to get in there and there's going to be that Ganesha guy with the big nose, you know, an elephant guy with the big nose. And it would be weird if a Buddhist monk, you know, went into some Hindu place and they're going to ask me to bow down to Ganesha or something, you know. And then I said, the other thing is that they're probably going to be singing Hare Krishna and all that. And, you know, it's not good for a Buddhist monk to be singing Hare Krishna, you know. So somebody led me there. It was on Lafayette, I think, in those days. And they got me in the elevator. And we went up to the, I don't know, what is it, third floor or something. And they said, you can have a private class. You know, no one will see you. And I said, okay, and then I'll sneak in. Or no, I'll put my monk's robe over my head or something. And so I got up and the elevator opened, and here's this huge statue of Ganesha staring at me, you know. And I was like, I told you, you know. And then you can hear people singing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, just like we just did, okay. And I was like, oh, this is going to be bad, you know. And I don't know if I did the right thing. And So I went into this special room, and David was there, and he said, okay, we're going to start exercises. Later he told me, you know, the first day you came to my class, you looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy. I was a little overweight in those days. And then I went in, and he started teaching me exercises, you know, asanas. And then after about 20 minutes, I thought, oh my God, this is the same as what we learn in the monastery. These are the same poses, exactly the same poses that we learned in the monastery, you know. And I was like amazed. And then I went back to the monastery, I met my asana teacher, and I said, you know, I have some bad news, you know. And he said, what, you know? I said, you know those big secret yoga that we don't get to learn for 20 years? You know, and he said, yeah. I said, there's people in America who know about it. You know? And then he said, well, how many people? And I said, well, I did see an article in the Wall Street Journal, and it says 20 million people are doing yoga, you know. And then he goes, 20 million, you know, and he starts to cry, you know. And I'm like, God, I didn't think he was so attached to his big secret asanas, you know. And there's a thing in Tibet called Pekyu. Pekyu means you like to keep your teaching secret and you don't want to spread it. You want to keep it to yourself, you know. So I thought, oh, this is kind of embarrassing because my lama is showing Pekyu, you know. And then I said, it's all right, lama, don't worry, you know. And he, you know, it's not so bad. They're actually doing it quite well, you know. And then he said, no, no, you don't understand. This is fantastic. This is wonderful. You know, I'm crying for joy, you know. And I said, well, why? And he said, yoga asana is just before enlightenment, people study yoga asanas. You know, just before they break over the line into enlightenment, people start doing these exercises. So 20 million people in this world are about to break over the line into their final enlightenment, you know. 20 million people attracted to yoga. This is a miracle on a planet. You know, this is a miracle. All of those people were geshes in their past life. You know, I said, no, no, lama, you know, it's like, we only graduate 2 geshes every year. I mean, there's 20 million of them. He said, no, no, you don't understand. There's many planets, you know. And he was arguing with me. And then I said, well, no, you don't understand. They're not doing yoga because they want to get enlightened. You know, they just want to lose weight, you know. And he said, no, no, you don't understand. He said, they forgot why they're doing yoga, you know. Like, they were doing yoga in their past life to reach higher goals, you know, deathlessness itself. And then, you know, they got distracted and they forgot when they got reborn. They forgot what they were doing, but they still, when they see a yoga sign, they're still, like, really attracted to yoga, but they don't know why, you know. So we have to remind them, you know, why they're attracted to yoga. Because according to our idea, no one does yoga unless they've done it in many lifetimes. You wouldn't be here tonight if you hadn't studied yoga in many lifetimes. So he was so happy. He was crying, you know. And he said, I think this is... he said, this is really beautiful, you know. People can break into enlightenment with yoga. And then they just need to know, they just need to remember what they were doing when they died last time. You know, when they got in a car accident last time, you know, what were they thinking about when they got in the accident, you know? And so he encouraged me to teach people about the inner meaning of yoga. So that's what we're going to do tonight. I wanted to thank a lot of the people here at Monte Lucia who, you know, we were looking for a space and we met Ballet Rieno. And on one of the World Cup semifinal days, we had a good day together. And he was very gracious, and he was very kind to offer us the space. And we're able to have the same space that Dharmitra used. I thought it was really auspicious to have. He has some of his staff really helped a lot. Ani Itzel. Is she here? Are you here? Yeah, I'd like to thank Ani. She's in the back. Okay. Yeah. And she really worked hard to get the space together and with 1,000 different things and everything. Like for weeks, she's been working to get it together. Sierra Harpley, is she here? Sierra? But she did all the posters and everything for free. The Monte Lucia staff helped us on that for free. And then, of course, I'd like to thank Vanessa Lee and Ian Lopatin. And I think you should give them a hand. They're from Atwan Yoga. And they've been very gracious to sponsor this event with Monte Lucia and help us have this event, okay? So now the gloves come off, all right? I'm going to stand up, is that okay? You guys stay if you like. Is that better for you, or does that, is that all right? Okay, all right. So they said, will you come and teach a Yoga Sutra? And I said, well, when I teach Yoga Sutra, it takes 4 years normally. I just graduated 135 students in our advanced program. They've been going for 12 years. And I said, I can teach Yoga Sutra, but it normally takes 4 years to finish your Yoga Sutra course. And they said, well, can you do it in 3 nights? So I said, that's kind of fun. Let me see what I can do, you know? And so I took the challenge. It was kind of a challenge, you know? Can you teach the Yoga Sutra in 3 nights? So what I thought was we would call it a Yoga Sutra intensive. And there's a tradition in my monastery, okay? And you know, I was there 25 years total. And it's the following. We don't take a class unless we intend to teach it someday, okay? So we don't sit in a class unless we intend to teach it someday. And there's this pressure in the monastery that the Lama will say, are you picking it all up? Are you giving it all? You know, because you're the next generation. You have to teach it next, okay? So I like that system, and I would like to keep that system for these 3 days, you know? Unless you're like a casual guest, and you know, you were looking for the restaurant and you came in by accident. You know, I would really like it if you guys could learn how to teach this course, okay, this 3-day course. And I have many students who've done that. I have maybe thousands of students around the world who have become teachers. And they've learned how to teach the Yoga Sutra, and they've learned how to teach many other things. I think it's really beautiful, you know? So you take responsibility to pass it on to the next generation. The Yoga Sutra has been around for 2,000 years. And each generation took responsibility to teach it on, to spread it on to the next generation. And then, you know, you're the one person sitting there thinking, oh, he's talking to the other people in the room. I'm not talking to the other people in the room, okay? I'm talking to you. All right, each person here. I give you a challenge, and I ask you to learn how to teach the Yoga Sutra, okay? I know a lot of you are yoga teachers. I had the pleasure of taking yoga classes from some people here, which I really enjoyed. So I'm going to ask that you take good notes. I don't want it to be some just like general talk, and you go home and forget everything or something like that. I want you to learn it well, and I want you to pass it on to the next generation. And so we have a system where we... I do homeworks, okay? I had a guy in Boston, he raised his hand at this point. He said, I haven't done homework since high school. And I said, look, you can either do homework or you can leave, okay? I'm not asking you, okay? I'm not saying that to you, but that was a different class. I said, you can do homework or leave. You know, I said, what do you do anyway? He says, I write symphonies. You know, I said, well, okay, well, tonight you're going to do homework. You know? So I gave him a homework. He fought me the whole class. Then by the end of the 3 days, he came up and he thanked me, and he said, oh, thank you for making me do the homework, you know? And then later he sent me a symphony, a Yoga Sutra symphony. You know, he wrote a whole, like, piece of music about the Yoga Sutra, and he said, oh, thank you, you know, now I can teach people Yoga Sutra. So I'm asking, you know, take notes. So where's, you got pens for anybody? Did anybody get a pen? Yeah, we didn't expect so many people, okay? I thought there were going to be 40 people. I'd like to ask anybody who's DMU from our university, don't take a pen, don't take a reading, don't take a homework until I give you one tomorrow, okay? So does everybody have a reading, though? Does everybody have a notebook and a reading?
No, I have extra readings.
Okay. Can you raise your hand if you don't have a reading? We didn't expect so many people, I'm sorry for that. And we'll have more notebooks tomorrow, okay? We'll have more readings tomorrow. So you're going to get a reading, and then tomorrow you'll have a notebook to put it in, okay? And I'm sorry, we just didn't... I thought Phoenix, like, there's going to be 6 people there. I need one too, Mr. Hagney. I got it. Okay. They should just get the first day. It's okay. This is day two. What day do you have? You have day two? Okay, you need day one, because we're on day one. Can you do that? Keep the day two if you have a day two, but you need a day one also. Who else? You have day one? Anybody who doesn't have day one, raise your hand. Kind of offering, right? And then this little guy fell into the water. from the sky. And the word in Sanskrit for fell is pap. So she said, oh, pap Anjali. Okay? And that's where his name came from. Okay? So somebody asks you who wrote the Yoga Sutra, and you're going to say, Pat Anjali. I was in a train station in India the first year of my study. Everybody was running around the station, and everything was crazy, and everybody was yelling, and I said, what's going on? He said, the Dalai Lama's teacher is here in the train station, you know? I said, oh my God, I got to go give him an offering. I ran across the street, I bought a cake. I ran into the waiting room, you know, there's Ling Rinpoche, you know? And I said, oh, can I just meet him and touch his hand or something? And he said, yeah, go ahead. You know, and I ran in, and then my teacher, one of my scripture teacher, was standing behind me, you know? And he said, oh, Ling Rinpoche, this is Michael, you know, he's just started studying. He's doing really good, you know? And Rinpoche was this big Bhairava, this big nasty guy. Oh, yeah? Well, okay, young man, what's the book you're studying? You know, and I forgot the name of the book because I was so scared. You know, it was Shantideva, right? And so my teacher is behind me, which is my... And I said, Shantideva, you know, and he says, oh, good, you know the name of the book. That's good. You know, and so you should know the name of the book, right? Yoga Sutra, written by? Patanjali, okay? Master Patanjali. About 18 centuries ago. And right there, I want to tell you why you're studying the Yoga Sutra, okay? People come to me, they say, I learned to do yoga exercises, I can do a headstand, I can do a scorpion, you know, I can even do a, what do you call it, peacock. You know, I'm doing really good, you know. But I would like to know something about the inner meaning of yoga. Can you, I got a call today, what's it called? Black Dog Yoga in LA. They said, come and tell us about yoga. I said, 40 classes? They said, one. I said, okay. They said, the inner meaning of yoga. We just want to know a little bit about the inner meaning of yoga. Because that's what you can get from the Yoga Sutra. Okay? And I just want you to think bigger than that. Okay? I want you to think bigger than that. It's not that there is physical yoga poses, and then there's the inner yoga, and you just pick it up at a couple of days in the Yoga Sutra class. It's not like that. And that's not the point, okay? The point is bigger than that. The Yoga Sutra is not just about yoga, okay? The Yoga Sutra gives a teaching by which you can change your reality. You can shift your whole world. You can change everything about your life and your reality. If you understand Yoga Sutra, it's not that you can get into a headstand. Okay? It's not even that you can open a chakra or two. Okay? It's that if you understand the Yoga Sutra, you can tweak your world. You can shift your world. You can make things happen in your world that anything you want, actually. If you really understand Yoga Sutra, you can shift reality. And you know, people who know me, I spend most of my time teaching business, you know. My lama in 1981, he said, we need to make money for the refugees. So I said, well, okay, why are you asking me? He said, you're going to start a business. You know, and I had been in the monastery like 8 years or 10 years, and I said, I don't know anything about business, I don't care about business, I don't like business people, they're all dishonest. I don't want to know about, well, get it, you know. And we had this big fight for a year. We had a fight. And he said, I'm the Lama. You know, he would just look at me sometimes and say, I'm the Lama. You know, you have to do what I say. You know, I said, I'm not American. We don't do what people say. You know, so then we had this big fight. Then one day he went to Rutgers. He gave a really beautiful talk at the university. And I was his chauffeur, right? I'm going to go home. I said, Lama, I'll do anything for you. You know, he said, start a business. And I said, okay. You know, so I went to New York. And then I said, what kind of business? He said, you meditate about it. So I meditated. And it came diamond business. And I don't know why, because I don't like diamonds. I don't know anything about diamonds. Nobody in my family ever did diamonds. I don't know why it came up diamonds. Okay? So I said, I have to start a diamond business. He said, okay, you go. You start a business. And then I said, how? He said, use yoga suits. Use diamonds. Just use a suit. stupid. You know, I just did what Yoga Sutra said to do, you know. And then you can use the Yoga Sutra for what I'm saying is that you can change your world. You know, like when I'm talking to men, you can reach into the. I like the part where they shoot the bullets at him, and he goes like this, you know? And the bullet just hangs in midair and then it drops on the ground. He's reaching into reality, he's shifting reality. And if you understand, you know, that's what I'm selling you. I'm not selling you inner body for yoga. I'm not selling you yoga asana, deeper thing. I'm selling you a way to change your whole reality. I used to have a handicap in my foot. I had gout, very bad gout, from my dad. And I couldn't walk, okay? And I used it on my foot. I did ballet for the last 5 years, okay? Like, I did ballet with some people from the New York City Ballet, you know? And I'm old, okay? So, I mean, you can change your bones. You can change your body. I have a friend who has had cancer, and I taught her Yoga Sutra, and that's a friend, right? When was that? 1980, I think. She had cancer. She's fine. She's what, 90 years old? Wow. She's 80 something. She's still doing all the accounting, and she helped us build our Adobe temple. She was stacking Adobes, you know? And so you can use it for relationships if you're having a trouble with a relationship. Or you want to find a nice partner, you can use it for that. What I'm saying is you can tweak how events happen in your life if you understand your religion. Of course, in our tradition, you want to go further than that. You know, it's good to have enough money that you don't have to think about money. You know, I don't have a big car, I have a very old car. But I don't have to worry about a car. You know what I mean? So I don't have to think about that stuff. And I don't have to think about my body anymore. And I have relationships that I want, very deep and beautiful relationships. So then from there you can go on to the bigger stuff, like happiness or the meaning of life, or you know, once you take care of the basic stuff, you can change the reality about Iraq or Afghanistan or the big things in life, right? So we believe that it's all the same. What do you call it? Key. You can use the same keys to achieve vast changes in the world. So I'm not up here trying to teach you about your chakras. We're going to go through chakras. But the reason to go through chakras is that you can change your life. And you gain control over your life. And you can adjust your life. Okay? Patanjali was also the father of dance, classical dance in India. Okay? He wrote one of the first great commentaries on Sanskrit, right? He wrote one of the greatest books on medicine in India. He wrote the greatest book on yoga, and he's considered one of the greatest philosophers of all yoga, of all India, right? In 5,000 years. So what's the connection between a dancer and a physician and a linguist and a philosopher and a yogi? What's the connection? Why would one person be interested in those five things, right? It's all connected, right? It's all about prana. It's all about chakras, right? If you learn how to do physical yoga correctly, then you learn about your inner body, and you can adjust the inner body. If you can adjust the inner body, you can change a bone in your leg. You see? If you know how to change the inner body, the outer body has to follow. Okay. The cool thing is that the world follows the outer body. Okay? You can change the outer body from the outer world by changing the inner body. You see? And deep down in the inner body there are songs. There are songs of ancient sounds, ancient words. This is Sanskrit. Sanskrit is the mother language of all modern languages except for Swahili and I think even Chinese and Hebrew are related. So almost all modern languages. These are the ancient sounds that are coming inside your body. Okay? From inside your body. If you learn those ancient sounds, if you learn about the inner body, you can adjust the outer world. You see? You could change the world at your leisure. Okay? And then you might be interested in becoming a physician to help other people. So this is why Patanjali was everything. That's what you're talking about, someone who mastered yoga, medicine, the mother language of all the world. And then, what was the other thing? Dance. Yeah, because once you get the prana moving, you want to dance, okay? Once the prana is moving, like I'm the klutziest person in the world, and I never thought to dance in my whole life. And I don't know, I was around 50, and then it just started, you know? And now I do ballet pretty, you know. And so you will see that when you master these things, the Yoga Sutra is not just to make you a better headstander, okay? And it's not even to make you give you peace of mind. It will give you peace of mind, and it will give you a great headstand. But it will give you the equipment to change the entire world around you if you understand it. And I've done it, and it's fun. Okay? You can do everything. You can do anything you want. Okay? If you get the how it works. So just come 3 nights, okay? It's not such a big expense of time, right? Come 3 nights. By the end, I say you will have something that if you wanted to make a $250,000 company on your spare time, I did it while I was doing this course, you know. You can do that. You want to fix your health, or you want to find your partner. These are all where you want to try to stop the war in your mouth or something like that. These are all the same skill. It's all in yoga. Okay, so it's very cool. You have to learn it, okay? And then it would be very cruel for you to learn it and not have to learn. You know, if what I'm saying is true, if there is a way that you can become like a success at whatever you try, then it would be cruel if you someone came to you on Friday and said, "Oh my God, teach it to me," and you said, "I wasn't listening on Tuesday. You know, I didn't get a pen. You know, I kind of remember some stuff, but I'm not quite sure, you know." So the homework is meant to like force you to make sure you know the main points, okay? And we have some staff here. We have about 10 senior students who have studied with me for, I don't know, most of them 7 to 12 years. And they're going to be available to you in the next few days, okay? So I have this deal. There's a Paradise Cafe. On what? Shea and Tatum, right? Okay? You go up Tatum and you go to Shea.
They said we could use the M Bar restaurant
here. Oh, and which restaurant?
M Bar.
M Bar restaurant, yeah. So you can go there too, okay? You can use the restaurant, I guess. That'd be fun. Those people will be here tomorrow and they will be here on Thursday, okay? We usually do our yoga and our meditation. We have a rule that we don't do anything else till 1 o'clock. We do our personal practice till 1 o'clock. So I'm asking the DMU people organize, okay? That there will be 25 people, senior people, meditation yoga, so they can be talking about that. If you want to come in the morning, or you want to come in the early afternoon, or you know, you want something. I encourage you to do that. Okay? I encourage you to do that. It just gets stronger. You see, I don't care that you did it on your own. I want you to know it. Okay? So, if you want to meet other people and hang out and do it together, then I would encourage you. Okay? I would encourage you to comment. And then you just talk. You know, you say, "What did he say about Patanjali or something?" You know? And you say, "No, it's Anjali." And then somebody says, no, he said Jali." You know? And then you can... You know, you can stretch things out. That's what we do in the monastery. We work together. All the students teach each other. So if you have time, anytime tomorrow after 1 o'clock, can we stay in this restaurant in Barlow? You can come and you can just have some, I like the hot taco here. And you can hang out with other people and you can just do your homework together, okay? You can come an hour early, you can come 10 minutes, so I don't care. Okay? Alright? Okay. So there is a... Do you have a copy of homework? First homework? Okay, I just need one. Okay, thank you. Yeah. So I'm going to go through the homework and make sure you got everything.
who wrote the Yoga Sutra, you know. When you know. Oh, what does the word sutra mean? Okay. Most people, you ask them, what's a sutra mean? They say, Kama Sutra is something to do with making out or something. You know? You gotta know what sutra means, okay? Sutra means a thread. Like when there's a Brahmin and they wear that sacred thread over their shoulder, that's called a sutra. Okay, so sutra means thread. Su is an ancient Sanskrit root. It came into English as so, to sew. And tra means the doer. So sutra means something you sew with, okay? And it's a thread. Why is a book called a sutra? A couple of reasons. In the old days, sutras were written on palm leaves, okay? Before the invention of paper. Before paper was invented, they wrote the sutras on palm leaves. And we still have those manuscripts. We have a project. I mean, some of us are working on a project for 23 years to type in all the ancient books. We have a couple hundred refugees working for 23 years. They finished 17,000 books. And so we have a lot of, and then we put them up for free on the web. So we have a lot of these palm leaf manuscripts. And you take a needle and you scratch the letters onto the palm leaf. And then you take soot and you rub it into the scratches. And that's how you print. And they last a long time. They've lasted thousands of years in India, okay? So we still have them. And we're typing them in. We have 100 years to go. We're on schedule. We really do. About 130 years to go. So that's what a sutra is. But sutra also means short book. A short book. Oh, I'm sorry. So how did they bind the leaves together? They used to drill a hole down through all the leaves. And then they would take a sutra or a thread and they would tie it through the hole. You know, and unfortunately some of the words have holes in them. Okay, but that sutra came from the thread that was used to tie the leaves together. Okay? And, but sutra also means a short book. Okay, sutra can mean do. In Tibetan, do means short. Okay, so do means a short book. Sutra means a short book. So Yoga Sutra means what? A short book on yoga. Okay? Alright. Let me see. Yeah, okay, you know how he got his name and you know what he's famous for. Oh, and how his life reflects the meaning of the word yoga. What does yoga mean? What's the word mean?
Huge
joint. Yeah, so huge is the root and it means to join. It came into the English words union, join, yoke, and jugular. This vein was named because it joins the head to the shoulder. Okay, so huge means to join. Yoga means to join something together. Okay, so he was able to join together the prana in the body, the inner wind of the body. Master Patanjali was able to teach us how to join the winds together. When the winds are joined in a certain way, your body changes. To fix your leg, you have to do a tiny joining of the wings. If you can take it further, you can make the body younger. You can keep the body young. If you take it further, you can stop death. You can stop the aging process completely. So that's yoga, okay? That's some of the meanings of yoga. Okay, what's your second? You got six more questions, okay? Okay, there are four chapters to the Yoga Sutra. They are called pada. Okay, pada means a leg. Like pedestrian came from that, pedal came from that. Okay, pada. Pada means chapter in Sanskrit. There are four legs or four chapters, like a table. There are four chapters to the Yoga Sutra. Okay, they're each called pada. Pada means a chapter. So I'm going to read you something from the second chapter. All right. That pretty much gives you the essence of the Yoga Sutra, okay? So if you understand this quotation, you understand how to change your life, how to change your world, okay? Here it is. In Tibet, in Sanskrit, it's Ahimsa Pratishtayam Tatsani Galvada Dhyana. Okay, say Ahimsa. I'm going to ask you to say stuff. Why? It keeps you away, okay? Say Ahimsa.
Ahimsa.
Pratishtayam.
Pratishtayam.
Tatsani Gal.
Tatsani Gal.
Okay, nobody in this class is going to say ahimsa, because that's not, that's a mispronunciation. I don't know who did that. It's wrong. It's ahimsa. Okay? Ahimsa. Ahimsa means nonviolence. Pratishtaya means if you live a life of nonviolence, if you maintain a way of life of nonviolence. Ahimsa pratishtaya. Tatsanidao. I'm going to leave that, okay? Vaira means fighting, friction, hassle. What do you call it? Conflict, yeah, conflict. Vaira means conflict. Tyaga means you can eliminate vaira. You can eliminate conflict. Okay, this is to me the most beautiful verse in the Yoga Sutra. Okay, ahimsa pratishtayam. If you become a non-violent person, vaira tyaga, you will give up conflict. Tatsanidao means in your world, in your presence. Tatsanidao means in your presence. Okay. Those who know Tibetan, that's a Mayingas, right? What's that mean? What's that mean? Yeah, if you don't practice ahimsa, if you don't practice nonviolence, in your presence there might be conflict. Okay? But for the person who practices ahimsa, the person who doesn't personally engage in hurting other people, they will not see violence in their world. Got it? Got it? There will not be violence in their world. Alright? I have a friend who said, oh, you mean they just won't notice the violence? I said, no, you don't get it. There won't be any violence in their world. Okay? Those people who are nonviolent will not experience violence in their world. And there won't be violence in their world. Okay? There's the whole Yoga Sutra right there. There's the whole Yoga Sutra right there. How do I start a quarter-billion dollar company? In my free time. In my spare time. How do I fix my foot or cancer? You know? How can I find a partner? If you understand this verse, there's the answer, okay? What you want to see, do it for someone else first, okay? What you want to see in your life, do it for someone else first, okay? That's the most important teaching of the Yoga Sutra, okay? If you don't want to see people fighting around you, what? Stop violence. Stop your own violence. Then people are sitting there and say, look, I'm not violent. My husband's violent. I'm not violent. You know, I mean, he's always yelling. He's always like, he hit me one time. You know, he's violent. I'm not violent. You know, but according to the Yoga Sutra, if you had no seeds for violence in your heart at all, even the seed in your heart, if you didn't even have wishing someone would fail at work that you don't like, or feeling a little angry at somebody, if you were totally pure of all negative thoughts, you wouldn't see any violence around you. Everyone around you would be happy and nice and getting along with each other. Okay, this is the most important verse in the Yoga Sutra. Okay, ahimsa pratishtayam tatsanidao. If you give up your personal violence, even if it's only secret in your heart, then you won't see people hurting each other in the world. Okay? And even if it sounds like some kind of nice, what do you call it, New Age, it sounds like something you heard at church, you know, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. In your mind right now, you're like, yeah, yeah, you know. But there's the secret. You want to make $250 million in your free time? You know, when you're not at the monastery studying, if you understand the technique, Valeriano and me were talking about technique, you see? There's a technique involved, okay? You have to serve others. If you want to see good things in your world, you have to serve others. But there's a technique involved. There's a trick to this spot. I can teach you in 3 days. You have to come for 3 days, okay? There's a technique involved, okay? You can, like, give a poor person some money, and you will get some money in 20 years. Okay, but I don't know, I'll be too old by then to use it. You see what I mean? Or if you're having violence at home, there's some kind of violence going on at home, and then you understand this verse, and you're more careful not to be violent, it might shut down at home in 6 years, okay? If you don't know the technique, there's a technique involved, there's a tricks involved. And I don't know, when my lamas taught me all this stuff, they were like, next life, next life. I'm like, listen, Lama, just sit down a second. I'm American. You know, we invented McDonald's. You know, I was at McDonald's the other day, and it seemed too slow. The French fries were too slow, you know? And I asked the guy, I said, how long did you take to make the French fries? He said, I made a boo-boo. I put the oil, I didn't turn it on right. I'm sorry it took 4 minutes. I timed it was 4 minutes. I said, well, how fast do you usually give the French fries? He said, we are required by the corporate headquarters to give them in 3 minutes. But I took 4 minutes. I said, I knew it. You know? Because I felt it, right? I felt something wasn't quite right, you know? And then I told my mom, I said, I'm the French fry, I'm the McDonald's, I'm an American, you know? We don't want this next life stuff, you know? We want to see peace in the world next year. We want to see, you know, some kind of physical problem. We don't want to wake up next life. You know, let's hear some. He said, well, that we need technique. Okay, so I said, yeah, well, teach me, I'm interested, show me techniques. You know, Valeriano told me, said, yeah, show me technique. I said, give me at least 2-3 days. Okay, there's a technique involved. Okay, you have to understand the technique, all right? You can make, this verse is saying you can make stuff happen, cool stuff happen. You can start the war in Iraq with your yoga. Okay, how? What's the technique? You gotta stick around. Okay. At least for a couple of days. Yeah, that's all. The implication is, by the way, if you could do it with violence, stay at home, right? Someone that enters home doesn't speak gently, they tend to yell, maybe they get even physical sometimes, and you want to stop that. He's telling you, you have to stop the nonviolence inside of you with technique. You have to know technique. If you don't know technique, I'm not saying it's going to happen fast. You might take 4 minutes instead of 3 if you don't know technique. You've got to learn technique, okay? But the cool thing is, that verse is saying you can use the same principle on everything else in your life that you don't like. Okay? If there's anything else in your life that you don't like, I can't do... I took a class from Darren Rose in Flagstaff the other day, okay? And he had us up on the wall doing Orjuna Dhanurasana, the worst pose in the world. And he said, put one leg up on the wall. So I'm like, I got you, Darren. I've been practicing that. And I put one leg up. And he said, put both legs up. And I'm like, you can't do that. And he said, no, here. And he got me up there, and then he flipped me over. And then I was standing. You know, how'd you do that, Darren? And he says, you'll learn, you know? And the point is, you can say, I want to learn to do a peacock, or I want to learn to do a scorpion, or something like that. You can use the same verse with technique, okay? I want to get a better job. I want to get rid of the person at work that bugs me, you know, without using a gun. I had people ask me, can you really do that? Can you eliminate people in your life who are bothering you? And I said, yeah, if you use the right technique, they will change, or they will leave, or they'll have a heart attack. And I said, I did it at my job. I don't know, did you ever go to my work? I don't know. I have 800 people working in New York. We bought a building. We bought a big building in New York. And I have 800 people, and they were all fantastic. Like, they would stay at work till 9. I'd say, I'm cutting you off at 5 o'clock. You can't get paid after 5 o'clock. And they still stayed till 9. And I said, why are you doing this? They stayed till the building closes. And I said, why are you doing this? And they said, we love it here. You know, we just love it here. And it was like this 800 people family, you know, and everyone was so happy all the time. Like, if you understand Patanjali's French fry method, you can fix your whole, everything in your life. Everyone will be cool around you. You'll just be walking around with cool people all the time, okay? But you can do anything, see? You can pick something and you can make it happen. Okay, that's what I'm trying to say. It's not just about doing handstands. All right. But you can learn to do handstands. All right. Sooner or later, we're gonna get into a question of how long I can go on. I don't want to take a break. Can I go one more question? And then we'll take a break? Okay. Let's do that. All right. Because I'm afraid we won't finish the whole thing. I'm determined to finish the whole thing. Even if Valeriano Star has to stay a long time, he won't die. Okay. Okay, this is cool. In the second chapter of the Yoga Sutra, Master Patanjali gives five steps. And technique, I'm talking technique, okay? Now we're talking technique. So he gives five steps to why we can't make stuff happen now, okay? Like if I said to you, could you make $10,000 tomorrow and bring it to class because we need to pay for something? And you would say, no, I can't do that. You know, I don't know how to do that. And then I would say, well, there's five steps that are blocking your mind, okay? So, or if I say, you know, is your spouse perfect? And you say, they're good, but they're not perfect. Would you like to make them perfect? Yes. Well, here, can you do it by tomorrow? And they say, I don't think so. I've been trying for 20 years and been here and nothing happened. Something happened. It got worse after. So anyway, Patanjali would say there's five steps, there's five things blocking you. And if you understand the five, you can break that limit of making stuff happen in your life. So he, in the second chapter, in the beginning of the second chapter, he explains five screw-up causes, okay? You shouldn't call them that, okay, in the homework. Five reasons things don't go well, right? And they're called, in Sanskrit, they're called klesha. Say klesha. Klesha means ram dhyun dengi gansa kishiti mashiru chepi sanjun semba. In the monastery, we have to memorize it, okay? Ram dhyun dengi gansa kishiti mashiru chepi sanjun semba. Any thought which disturbs the peace of the mind of the person who has it. Any thought which disturbs the peace of mind of the person who has it in their mind. Okay? Any thought which disturbs the peace of mind of the person who has it in their mind is a klesha. In the second chapter of the Yoga Sutra, Master Patanjali gives you five that are causing all your trouble. If you understand them, then you can make the foot thing happen, or you can make the partner thing happen, or whatever you want, okay? So, here are the five, okay? Vidya, Samita, Raga, Dvesha, Abhidvesha. Say avidya. What's that? Avidya. Asmita. Raga. Dvesha. Abhidvesha. Abhidvesha. Okay. Okay. So what are they? What do they mean? Avidya, you know. Avidya means ignorance. Okay. Not understanding. So the first problem in your life, the reason stuff doesn't work in your life, is because you don't understand things. You don't understand how to make stuff happen, alright? Avidya, that in this five-step thing, avidya means the wrong thinking that you came into this life with, that you were born with, okay? The wrong thinking in your mind that you were born with. For example, your boss yells at you, okay? Your manager yells at you at work. The person who helps, who is your supervisor at work, they yell at you. So what's human nature to do back to them? It's human nature to yell back. It's just it's what all human beings do. And animals too. I mean, basically. Someone yells at you, you're stupid. You say, no, you're stupid. Okay. And that's a kind of violence. And according to the verse you just read, then there will be more violence. You will see a boss be more violent. Not like shoot you, right? But they'll yell at you again next week. Okay? Why? Because you didn't stop the violence. You what do you call it? You perpetuated the violence. They were violent to you, they said you're stupid. And then human nature is to say something back that keeps the violence rolling. Okay? That's avidya, that's ignorance. And you were born with it. If you're in this world, you were born with it. And if you are who you seem to be, okay, then you were born with it. You came into this world with avidya. You don't understand how things work. If you understood how things work, you could get rid of your boss in a week. Non-violently. You'd just go away. Or he would change. Okay? Really. Technique. It's a technique question. Right? You can make stuff happen. But we came into this life with ignorance. We respond with the same, and then he comes back again. Okay, so that's avidya, the ignorance that you were born with. What's the next one? Avidya asmita. Say asmita. Asmita means, this is tough, selfness. It means selfness. Okay, this is tough, but I'm going to do it now because you're going to be more tired later. Okay, you thought this was just going to be a nice little talk, right? Aspirin, okay? Think about an aspirin. You guys have this cup already. Think about an aspirin, alright? Usually I carry a bottle of aspirin with me just to talk about it. When you get a headache, you take aspirin or something, Tylenol, Sumatriptan, you take something, right? You get a bad headache, and I know what it is. You have a really bad headache, you have a migraine, and your hands are shaking. And you take the bottle, and you are like this. Your hand is like this on the bottle. And you're like trying to get the goddamn cap off, you know? Because your head hurts like crazy, you know? And then you're thinking, they didn't make this for people with headaches, you know? They think they're trying to, like, protect kids or something, right? And you're like, you know, you're trying to get the top off, and then you take that aspirin, right? Why? Because you believe it will help you. You believe it will work. And what I'm trying to teach you tonight is that things don't work. And if you understand that, you can do anything. Okay? Things don't work the way you thought. Okay? Just think. When somebody says, where'd you go last night? I was at the Mona Lisa Resort. You know, this really nice guy said they could use the place. And what did you study? The guy said nothing works. You know, cars don't work. Aspirins don't work. Planes don't work. Lights don't work. Food doesn't work. To make you run. Nothing works. Well, then the guy's gonna look at you and say, that's what you learned last night? Did you pay anything for that? You know, okay. Okay. By the way, we charge, but it's just to get you to take it seriously. We lost money, you know, I mean, we do all this stuff. Okay. The point is that aspirin doesn't work. Okay, why? Because when you take it, you don't know if it's gonna help or not. Right? Am I right? Just say yes. If you say, by the way, the more you agree with me, the faster you get refreshments, okay? So, does aspirin work? You have to say, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. If you're honest, right, you say, I get a headache, I take aspirin, sometimes it works, right? When it works, why does it work? Look at the bottle. I was writing the homework answers out last night, the night before. I went and got a bottle of aspirin and I tried to find, they call it what? Active ingredient. They call it active. So I was looking, what's the active ingredient? In aspirin, it's just aspirin. I said, that doesn't make a very good story. I looked up Tylenol. It was acetaminophen or something like that. So there's an active ingredient. And then it said inactive ingredient was starch. Okay? So there's the corn starch. And then there's a little bit of stuff in there that makes the aspirin work. Got it? Right? That makes the aspirin work. Except it doesn't make the aspirin work because it only makes the aspirin work sometimes. So did they forget to put the active ingredient in some of the aspirin? No, be honest. Answer me. No, in debate, this. Active ingredient, yaha! Is there an active ingredient in aspirin? Yeah. Active, yaha! Is it active? Is it active all the time? No. So it's not an active ingredient. It's a sometimes active. We do that for 5 hours every day in the monastery. Your hands split open, the blood's flying in the back. And you lose your voice, but you learn how to think, right? So, it's not an active ingredient. There is no active ingredient. Because it doesn't work. Because if it worked, it would work all the time. Okay? If it worked, it would work all the time. And you have spent your whole life using things that don't work all the time. You get up in the morning and you try something to make money. Or you try something to be happy. Or you try something to find a partner. And you don't know if it's gonna work, do you? So it doesn't work. Nothing you've ever tried works because it doesn't work every time. So you have spent a whole lifetime trying things that don't work at all. You see, you're like doing voodoo. You're like those like Aborigine people. They say, how do you make it rain? They say, you have to throw a rock with your left hand on the fourth of the month towards the moon, you know, and that makes it rain. You know, how do you make money? You work hard. But there's people who don't work hard and make money. How do you fix a headache? You take aspirin. But lots of people take aspirin and nothing happens. Yeah, you're right. Throw a rock at the moon on the head. You know? No. I mean, to a really enlightened being, they look like Aborigines. You know? They're like, what are you guys doing? You get a headache. We take these little pills. You know? Does it fix your headache? Sometimes. What's wrong with you people? You know, why don't you try something that works? Well, it works. But you just told me it doesn't work. It works sometimes. But that means it doesn't work. Sometimes when you throw a rock at the moon on the fourth, it rains. You know, no, advanced people, really yoga sutra people, real yogis, would look at us and say, we're crazy. We're just crazy people. You spend your whole, every action you take in a day does not work to get you what you want. It's true. It's true. I'm going to show you something that does work. Really honest. It just does. And you can look the company up on, it's the fastest growing company in the history of New York City. Why? When did you do that? In my spare time from the monastery. How did you do it? What is this crap? Anyway, here we go. What was I supposed to be saying? Oh, yes. So, aspirin. We were on five questions. I'm sorry. We'll get through this. And then you'll get refreshments, I promise, okay? So you come into life with a wrong idea. You come into life with avidya, or ignorance. Throwing rocks at the moon on a fork is avidya. Taking an aspirin when you have a headache is avidya. Turning the key to start a car is avidya. Why? It doesn't always work. Well, that's because the battery was bad. Yeah, that's what I mean. Okay, I'm trying to make a breakthrough here. Don't tell me the battery was bad. Why was the battery bad? Why didn't the car start tonight? Why doesn't it not start tomorrow or the day before? Why did the battery work for a while and then it didn't work for a while? It wore out. Why? The chemicals changed. Why? Don't ask that, Johnny. Right? That's what your parents told you at a certain point. You said, stop asking them. Okay. Anyway, you get an answer finally, all right? I don't know how old you are, but you finally get an answer. Okay. Avidya, you come into this life misunderstanding how stuff works. Asmita, selfness. You think stuff has something in it that makes it work. Got it? You think aspirin has something in it that makes it work, and that's wrong. You think there's something in the car that makes it, in the key that makes this car start, it's wrong. You think there's something about working that makes money, wrong. You think there's something about reasoning with your husband that's going to make him change, wrong. Okay? It's not there. Those things aren't there. Asmita means thinking there's something inside stuff, and there's none. Okay? It's tough. It's tough. Okay, you gotta think. In this class, you gotta think. Okay, I'm not gonna get up and give you like New Age platitudes. Okay, I mean I can later if you want. All right. So asmita, second step. You think stuff has stuff in it that makes it work. You take an aspirin because you think there's what did she call it? You think there's an active ingredient in the aspirin. If it was active, it would fix everybody's headache. Okay, got it? Asmita. Then raga, say raga. Raga is like, I want something. I want something. Raga means wanting. Dvesha is number four. It means not wanting, not liking. Liking and disliking, how's that? Liking and disliking. Is it wrong to like stuff? Is it unspiritual to want things? You know? Is it wrong to make $250 million? Is it wrong? It could be wrong. Is fire wrong? Is fire bad or good? Well, if you burn a house down with it, there's people in there, it's bad. The fire's bad. If you use it to cook a nice, what do you call it? I'm working on a big board now. Anyway, if you use it to cook something, it's a good thing. Okay? Is money bad or good? Is a lot of money bad or good? We have a 23-year refugee project money. We've been feeding 3,000 refugees for 23 years. Is that good or bad? That's good. So, Dvesha, it's not wrong to want things. You know, if you want money, if someone says, if you make some money, guess what, you can go to our Prieta and buy food for all the people there. I say, that's good. That's a good thing. Do you want to help people? Yes. Is that wrong? No. Is wanting things wrong? Wanting things is like fire. You know? If you want a big car and you hurt everybody in your family and you never come home because you want a big car, that's wrong. That's a wrong wanting. So wanting can be wrong and wanting can be okay. Wanting to help the world is a good thing. Wanting to get rich and have a big car at the expense of your family is a wrong thing, right? So raga, which one is raga? The bad one. Okay, the bad one. Why is that wanting wrong? What makes wanting wrong? Here's the test. Here's the barometer. If you would hurt someone to get what you want, that's the bad kind of wanting. Okay? If you would hurt someone to get what you want, that's the bad kind of wanting. Got it? That's easy. Alright? Is disliking things wrong? Is disliking things wrong? I dislike the war in Afghanistan. Is that bad? Of course not. It's a good thought. Disliking war is a good thought. Not wanting people to suffer is a good thing. Okay, got it? But in this case it's bad, so what is it? It's disliking people, disliking things, and hurting people to get away from them. You see what I mean? Get this. You can only dislike someone in the wrong way, and you can only like something in the wrong way if you don't understand it. Okay? If you don't understand it, I would kill to get my aspirin right now. I would do anything to get my aspirin. I would steal a bottle of aspirin to get an aspirin right now. Okay? That's a wrong one thing. Why? You don't understand what makes aspirin work. You don't understand what makes aspirin work. If you understood what makes aspirin work, you would never hurt someone again. Because then it wouldn't work. Okay? If you understood how aspirin work, you would never hurt someone to get it, because then the aspirin wouldn't work. Got it? That's what he's talking about. That's raga dvesha. So we have, so far we have avidya, asmita, raga dvesha, and we have to go to abhinivesha, and then you get your... Abhinivesha is what prevents you from getting refreshments, okay? It's just between you and refreshments, it's just abhinivesha right now. What is abhinivesha? This is tough. Classically is explained wrong, okay? Classically is explained as desire for life at the end of your life, which is not a bad thing, okay? So it shouldn't be explained that way. To not want to die is not bad. Okay? That's wrong. Abhinivesha is ignorance in the moment. Okay? Ignorance in the moment. I'll give you one example and we'll start. Okay? You want a donut. Okay? You like maple covered donuts. Okay? Like you have a thing about maple covered donuts. Okay? And then you go to the, what is it called? Dunkin' Donuts. Or Tim Hortons, depends on where you live. And you walk in and you look and there's one maple covered donut left. And then there's a lady behind you, an old lady, she's coming in behind you. And you hear her say to her husband, they're moving slow, right? She's moving slow. And she says to her husband, I hope they have maple covered donuts this time, you know? And then you're like, oh man, one maple covered donut left. And then you like go really fast to the counter and you say, give me the last meal from the, you know, and do it fast. You know, and let them. So that's raga. Okay, that's raga. That's wanting something at someone else's expense. Alright? That's raga. And it depends on an ignorance of the moment. You must be misunderstanding that donut in the moment to want it that way. Why? Ahimsa pratishtam tatsanina bharatyaga. Whatever you want, you must give to others first. Whatever you want, you must provide to others first. Okay? You cannot get a maple covered donut by taking the last one. It's not possible. And then your mind, you're like saying in your mind, that's crazy. I got lots of glasses of maple covered donuts. You know, I didn't share with anybody. No. Then you know you're making a mistake. You don't understand where the donut came from. You don't understand where the donut came from. If you understood where the donut came from, you would let the lady have it. Why? Because you're nice? No. Because you like donuts. Okay. Alright? You would give the last one away because you want it. And you want more. Okay? That's the intelligent thing. That's the yogi's way to make donuts. You know? But we'll talk more about that. Anyway, in a single 5 minutes in the Dunkin' Donuts, all five of those steps, they go pung, 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 pung. You seed in your mind from your past life to misunderstand the donut. You look at the donut and you think about it the wrong way. Then you want it. And then you don't want them to get it. And then you take steps. Abhinivesha in the end means karma. Karma means you do something. You reach out. You take the last donut. All in a minute. It all happens in a minute. These five thoughts happen in your mind all day, every few minutes. The donut will come if I'm fast. Mm-hmm. I get donuts by being ahead of the other people. I want the donut, who's there. I don't want to lose the donut, so I act fast. I move faster. And then that's five steps forward. And then you just lost a lot of donuts. Okay? And you don't get what you want. And then you feel unhappy. Okay? How that happens, how that works, we'll talk more. Okay? We'll talk more. Basically, you wouldn't take the last donut if you understood things. Okay? If you didn't misunderstand things, you would get away the last donut. Why? Because I wanted that. Okay? Got it? How that works, we'll talk about it. But it's very relevant to your life. If you, by the way, yoga is the same as aspirin. Okay? I think we're all united in this room because we are all people who do yoga asanas, right? Mostly. Almost everybody in this room does yoga exercises, right? Maybe not every day, maybe not as often as you're supposed to, but we all do some kind of yoga, right? It's the same as the aspirin. Some people go into yoga class, they go into a pose, they hurt themselves. I've met many people like that. What's the newest kind of yoga? I always go to New York twice a year. Why? I just want to see what's the newest kind of yoga. First it was hip openers, then it was, what do you call it, prenatal, and then nowadays it's called restorative. You know, and I went into class, I said, this is interesting, what's restorative mean? They said, that's yoga for people who hurt themselves during yoga. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, so yoga is like the aspirin, okay? Maybe it will work on your body. Maybe it will hurt your body. You see? Maybe it will work on your body, maybe it will hurt your body. Okay? We don't even know how yoga works. You see? You think yoga's gonna make you thinner or stronger or healthier or more flexible or more handsome or more beautiful. But you don't know if it's gonna. Some people go in and hurt their neck. Some people break their neck. I know a yoga teacher with a lot of broken neck. She broke a neck. I mean, it can hurt you. Okay? So how does yoga work when it works? How to make it work every time? It's in here. It's in the Yoga Sutra. Okay? So we'll do that after refreshments. I don't know where is refreshments? Yeah. Refreshments are back there. Basically we stuck with fruit and healthy stuff. Because I want you to concentrate after the break, okay? And if I give you a bunch of donuts and stuff, you won't be able to think after the break. Okay? So have a nice 5-10 minute break. I'm here if you want to come up and say hi or anything you want. And we'll start again in 5-10 minutes, is that okay? What time are we supposed to start? We'll go for just a few minutes back to the break, all right?
Okay, we'll start. By the way, you should have a reading, okay? And that's a new translation of the Yoga Sutra. And you've gone through already the first few pages. But now we're going to start some sections on karma, okay? On how karma works. Somebody asked me if we're going to be doing more of this. I'm going to try to do something every month. I'm moving back to Phoenix, okay? I grew up here and I was gone for 35 years and I'm moving back now. So I would like to continue something once a month. And if you're interested, we need your emails. So I think, who's doing the emails?
Yeah, did people give their email when they came in tonight? Oh. Do people remember that? If you didn't, that's to us pass a pad around and we're only going to use it for getting those talks. We want to do anything else with the email.
Yeah, actually we're going to do a... we're going to Europe, but then I think in November we're doing a 10-day intensive here. And it's free, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's free, and that's going to be this part of kind of a long cycle of really beautiful teachings in Phoenix that will go, I think, 6 or 7 years or something. There'll be a free 10-day program here in November, okay? And then that'll be followed up by a retreat, a 10-day retreat in January, which is also free, except you have to pay for your... we're renting a retreat, what do you call it? Center in Prescott, to do meditation on what you study in November. Okay? We'll talk about that. Okay. But in my immediate lineage, we don't get charged. My teacher taught me for 30 years and they didn't charge us. You have to pay for your student. You have to pay for their housing and their food. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a different system. Anyway, okay. Hey, Father. Say Te Pada, Paritapa, Kala, Punya, Apunya, Akutvat. Master Patanjali in the second chapter starts the teaching on karma, okay? How karma works. If you want to make things happen in your life, you have to know how karma works, okay? The whole French fry thing is karma with technique, okay? If you want to be good in yoga, if you want to stay young or strong, you have to understand karma. If you want to have a nice partner, you have to understand karma. If you want to make money, you have to understand karma. If you want to stop the war in Iraq or stop hunger in the world, you have to understand karma. So Master Patanjali goes off into karma. What is karma? Karma means anything you say or do or think. Anything you say or do or think is karma, okay? In the ancient scriptures it says, Lele jitinasoke, deni semba dandeche, semba yikileyeno. These are the opening lines of the book on karma, okay? It says, Lele jitinasoke means what? All the planets of the world have come from karma. This planet also. Everything in Phoenix has come from karma. Lele jitim nasake. Deni samba? Karma is thinking. Okay? Raw karma. The karma in its rawest form is thinking. Okay? Deni samba dan deche. Deche means, and what thinking makes you do or say. So people say, what's karma? They say, like, killing somebody is karma. That's just secondary karma. You're calling somebody stupid. That's secondary karma. Raw karma, pure karma, is the thought to do it. It's thinking to do it. Okay? And you have to understand karma if you want to make stuff happen. You know? Anything you want to happen, you can make happen. You can make a $250 million company in your free time. You can change the bone in your foot, but you have to understand karma. Okay? So what is karma? It's anything you think. And then what you say or do because you thought about it. Okay, got it?
That's karma. Ten pada paritapa palaponya puni hati dvat. Yoga Sutra. That's very beautiful. Pada, anybody know Russian? Holodna. What's Holodna?
Cold.
Cold. Pada means cold in Sanskrit. Everything comes from Sanskrit. Paritapa, what's tapas?
Heat.
What's tapping? It comes from tapas. You see, so pala, Yoga Sutra, Master Patanjali says, te pada paritapa pala. You get fruits, pala, which comes from ball, okay? Or a flower. You get results in your life, which are cool or hot, meaning what? Pleasant or unpleasant, okay? Te pada paritapa pala, punya or punya. Depending on whether you help other people or not. Okay? Punya means good deeds, things you do to help other people. Apunya means things you do to hurt other people. Hetuvad means from those causes you get that. So what's the first law of karma? What's the very first law of karma? You get what you give. There's a quality of, what do you call it? Jesus said what? You don't get grapes from thistles, was it? Figs from okay. Anyway, you don't get watermelons from cactus. Okay? You don't plant cactuses and get watermelons. It doesn't work that way. If you plant a cactus seed, you will get a cactus. If you plant a watermelon seed, you will get a watermelon. The first and crucial law of karma, if you want to make $250,000, or have a nice partner, or stop the world around, the first law of karma is if you hurt someone, something bad will happen. If you help someone, something good will happen. Okay? And when I say that, I'm not just saying it as a nice guy, okay? I'm not saying it to be a nice guy. What I'm trying to say is you cannot get anything good you want unless you help someone else. It's not possible. It cannot happen. Okay? If you don't help other people, if you don't plant a watermelon seed, it is not possible to get a watermelon. Okay? If you want financial prosperity, you must help other people. There's no choice. It cannot come. It will not come from any other thing. Okay? If you're angry with people, if you yell at people, and then you expect people to be nice to you, that's like saying, I want a watermelon, so I'm planting a barrel cactus. And then people look at you like you're crazy, right? You say, Geshe-la, I started a garden, I got inspired by you. You know, I started a garden. They taught me how to some garden stuff. You know, I say, cool, what are you growing? They say, watermelons. I said, well, show me the seeds, you know. And they say, yeah, there's barrel cactus seeds. I said, wait a minute, you're planting barrel cactus seeds to get watermelons? They say, yeah. And no, the people would say you're silly or you're crazy or you're dumb or you're just, it sounds stupid, right? But to say that you yell at people at work and then you expect people to be nice to you, it's insane. It's insane. It's crazy. I want to make money, but I don't want to help poor people? Then don't talk to me. You're just planning barrel cactuses. Okay? You have to help poor people. It's not possible any other way. The fruit will always resemble the cause. That's the first and greatest law of karma. Okay? It's always like that. You have to get that. It has to be in your head. Okay? Whatever you want, you must provide first to someone else. That's all. Whatever you want in your life, you must provide first to someone else, or you can't get it. You won't get it. Okay? It's not possible. Because that's the seed. Okay? Okay, what's the next thing here? Parinama papa sanskara dukhaya guru navakti viroga chcha dukkha mevam sarva direkana. I want to teach you another thing about karma. Okay? People say, I'm getting old. Or, I had a nice relationship and we were really tight for like 3 years and everything was going really good. And then just slowly things fell apart. One by one. I remember the first night she got mad. I remember the second night she got mad. A year later, I couldn't count the times she got mad. And then now we're worst enemies, you know? And like that, things fall apart. There was a book, right? There was a book called Things Fall Apart. Right? If you understand karma, you understand how things fall apart. And then you can stop them from falling apart. So how do things fall apart? To understand that, you have to understand how karma is planned. So I think we'll cover that and we'll stop for tonight, okay? We'll cover that and we'll stop for tonight. How do you plant karma in your mind? How do you plant a seed in your mind? Okay? When you do something, when you say something, when you think something, there's always one witness there. Who?
You.
Okay? Alright? Karma is planted when you watch yourself doing something. Karma is planted when you hear yourself say something. Karma is planted by hearing your own thoughts in your own mind. Okay? That plants karma in your mind. Okay? Nothing else is necessary. People say, people close their blinds of their room and they lock the door and then they do something they're not supposed to do. In the karma system, that's dumb. Because the camera is there with you. You see, the camera is your own consciousness. If you are aware of doing something, you have planted a seed. Okay? Karma is planted by being, we're talking technique, Valeriano. Okay? This is the beginning of technique. Okay? Karma is planted. We're talking how to make it fast and more powerful. How to make a quarter billion instead of 10,000. Really. So the first rule is it's planted by being there. Okay? Your reality is coming from seeds in your mind, which are planted because you're aware of what you're doing. Okay? Got it? So let's say I yell at somebody, okay? I yell at someone who works for me. Okay? I say something, I did it today, I said something unkind. I didn't mean to, I said it at my friend Scott's house. It slipped out of my mouth and I regretted it for like an hour. And I said something unkind, okay? So then that seed is planted in my mind. Depending on how strong my emotions were and other technique questions, which we'll cover tomorrow, okay? Depending on the technique, that seed is planted strong or weak, okay? Strong seed or weak seed. Jesus called it, throw your seeds on the stone or throw your seeds on the earth. There's a difference, okay? There's a difference. If the seed is well planted, then it stays in the subconscious. And then in 6 weeks, or 1 year, or 6 hours, it comes out of the subconscious, and it affects how I see things. You see? The seed ripens in my mind, and it affects how I see something. So someone comes up to me and says something, so I yelled at somebody on Tuesday. And then on Thursday, I meet somebody, and they say, you know, how are you, Geshe Michael? You're looking a little robust. You know? And if I yelled at someone, if I criticize someone on Tuesday, on Thursday, when the karma ripens in my mind, I interpret robust as fat. You know, they're criticizing me. You know, I hear criticism. Okay? They were just saying, maybe they intended to say you look strong. Okay? But I hear it as criticism. Why? Because the karma ripened in my mind. The seed ripened in my mind. I criticized somebody on Tuesday. It put a seed in my mind. Then on Thursday, someone came up to me and said something just to be nice, and I hear it as criticism. And it makes me unhappy. It's an illusion, right? They didn't mean to say something bad, but it makes me unhappy. It works. It causes something in me. It makes me unhappy, right? That's a ripening of karma. So karma is stored by being there when you did something. And you're always there, okay? Then it stays in the mind for a while, and then it comes out and it affects how you see. What about business? How does this affect business? I like to tell a story, which we don't have time to talk about, how I bought 10,000 yellow diamonds by accident one day. A couple $1 million of yellow diamonds by accident one day, okay? I bought them, I had to get the money, I'm stuck with 10,000 yellow diamonds in Manhattan. Then I looked at the pile of diamonds and I thought, God, we can make a new product. We'll market it as fancy yellow, gold diamond. We'll put it in white gold. We'll put it with some yellow gold. We'll market it to Saks Fifth Avenue. And we did. And we made $5 million profit off these ugly yellow diamonds. And people were happy. I'm not saying we didn't cheat anybody. We said they're yellow. And they're special. You know? And then we made them into this new kind of thing. But why did I see them that way? You see? We're talking business. We're talking how to improve your business. Why did I see them that way? And we were around a board meeting over the Hudson River, and we're like on this big table with 24 vice presidents. And why did I see them that way? Because I was working on a refugee puppy. Got it? That karma ripened in my mind, and I saw something else. Okay? Like that. Karma comes out, it ripens depending on how much you want to help other people. You see? If you are kind and help other people, then suddenly the way you see the world changes. And you see things that other people don't see. Okay? Even with your body. Okay? Even, like, if you help sick people and then you go do yoga, something changes. Something changes. We'll talk about it. Alright? So that's another principle. That's how that's how karma is planted, and that's how karma comes out. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, another principle of karma, it wears out. It wears out. All seeds wear out. All seeds wear out. When a seed produces a tree, I went to the saguaro forest today. I came down from Fly, right? And there's lots of saguaro. And you see some of them just fell over, you know? That means there was a strong seed, it grew a huge saguaro, and then its time passed, and it fell down, right? The seeds in the mind are the same, okay? You collect a seed in the mind to have a good partner, a nice partner, a new partner, someone you really like. So, by the way, what would be the seed for that? What's the karma for that? How do you find a new partner? Help lonely people. Okay? Like, people ask me, should I look on the internet or should I go to a club? I say, go to an old folks home. And they're like, what? Okay. They think that it's like kinky or something. I said, go to an old folks home, you know? Why? Make the karma by helping someone who's lonely, then go to a club. Or then go to the internet, because it doesn't matter, they'll both work. Got it? Because the real cause is helping someone who's lonely. The expression of the result could be a club. The expression of the result, I got in trouble from going to a club, but anyway, you don't want to know about that. Then the expression of the result could be on the internet. You see, it doesn't matter. If you help a lonely person, the karma will come back to you either through the internet or through a club. It doesn't matter. You can go to either one. They'll both work. If you don't help a lonely person, and then you go to a club, nothing will happen. Or you can go to the internet and also nothing will happen. Got it? It's not the internet or the club. It's helping the lonely people. Got it? Everything's like that. All right? Now, when you help a person, lonely, and you visit them, and you put a seed in your mind, right? Tibetans go like this, mind. You put a seed in your mind. That grows in your mind. And that comes out of your perceptions, and it changes how you see stuff. You go on the internet, you find somebody. You go to a club, you find somebody. You go to a yoga talk, and you find somebody. You see what I mean? Because you have the karma. But then the karma starts wearing out the minute you spend any time with them. Got it? You're using up your karmic credit card as soon as you meet them. You know, Tibetans have this debate. What causes death? What causes death? Bark. What kills a person? Being born. What destroys a company or a resort? The building of the resort. You see what I mean? It has to. It always will. The energy that goes into the building kills it. Eventually, it will fall down. So you have to know about karma that you have to replenish the karma. Okay? You can't help one lonely person and then go find somebody. You can't help one charity and then get some money. You can't stop. Okay? That's a trick. We're getting technique here, Melanie. Okay? You can't stop. Your kindness has to be continual. Okay? Because one karma will die in the way that the saguaro grows and dies. Okay? The seed will grow and the seed will kill the thing. The seed kills the tree. Okay? Unless you replant the seed. Okay? So that's a big part of karma. What else we got here? I think we're almost got you exhausted enough. Last thing, okay? I promise this is the last thing. Hayam dukam anagatam. Hayam dukam anagatam. Let me say, people come up to me and they say, I know people who are really generous and they're broke all the time. And then I know people who are really cheapskates and they're making lots of money. You know? Or I know people who help lonely people all the time and they never find anybody. And I know people who ignore the elderly and they have lots of boyfriends calling them, right? Like that. And then you have to get into Hayam Dukam Anagatam. It means there's a time gap. Okay? This is a technique thing. There's always a time gap between what you do and the time it takes for the seed to grow in your mind. There's always a time delay. Okay? Why? I mean, you don't plant a watermelon seed and sit... Alicia said that, right? You don't plant a watermelon seed and then sit there and say, you know, grow. You know, you come back in a couple of weeks and there'll be something growing, right? It takes time in the subconscious for a karmic seed to grow, okay? So you're kind to somebody, you help a poor person. And then the next day you go to work and they fire you. And then you give up Geshe Michael's program. You say, this stuff doesn't work. Why? I gave money on Tuesday, on Wednesday I got fired. Hey, the Wednesday stuff came from before. Okay? The Tuesday stuff is gonna make something in a week or a month, okay? There's a time delay here. And don't get fooled by appearances. That's what illusion means, Maya. Okay? Don't get fooled by appearances. Don't say, I was kind to my husband, I was non-violent tonight, and he still yelled at me. Well, that's coming from last week. Okay? Don't get confused by, don't get confused by what happens and then what happens right after that. Because what happens right after that is not connected to what happened just before that. It's connected to what you were doing last year or last month. Okay? So you have to understand that there will be a gap between the time that you do a kindness and the time that it comes back to you. Our business is to shorten that gap. Our goal in life is to shorten that gap down to almost nothing. You see? We don't want Geshe Michael to come up and say, give away your money and maybe something will happen in a couple of years. And then something little happens in a couple of years and you say, Geshe, did that come from what I did last year? So I don't know. You know, I mean, you can't believe in this stuff unless you can shorten the time gap, because if it takes too long, you can't be sure that what came to you came from what you did. You see what I mean? And then you're back where you were in the first place. You see? So I have to teach you how to make stuff happen enough. If I can say, do this on Tuesday and this will happen by next Tuesday. If it happens, then you have to say, I believe. You know? And you see, you need that. Otherwise, I could just get up here and say any random thing, right? You could say, oh, I lost my job. And I'll say, well, you were mean to somebody when you were 6 years old. And you'll say, yeah, well, what am I supposed to do now? You know? It can't be like that, right? There has to be, you have to be able to observe the connection, right? Or else you can't do this program. This program's not going to work. Here's why I can get up and make any old excuse. You see? You can say, the hotel didn't have a lot of guests last week. And I'll say, well, you weren't nice to your mother, you know, when you were 18. You know, and you'll say, but Geshe, how do you prove that? Or, you know, how can you see a connection? Because until you can see the connection work, you're not going to buy what I say. So I'm going to try to show you how to shorten the time gap, okay? Otherwise, it's just random. I could get up and say anything. Oh, you weren't nice when you were 14. Or, you know, I can say anything, and you can't prove it, and I can't prove it either. Okay? So the goal, tomorrow we'll start, is to show you how to make a mental scene and then track its progress and see it, its result come out in a real case. Okay? And then you can start managing your own reality. You can start adjusting your own reality. Okay? Like that. It's technique. So tomorrow we'll do more on technique. Okay. I think you won't be able to do the whole homework. Maybe you will. You can only do the first five of the, there are six questions on the first homework. You can only do five. I've only covered five. Okay? The last one is about love. The last one is about the nature of love. And you have to do all these things with great love. And Master Patanjali, in the Yoga Sutra, he explains how to develop higher love. How to develop higher forms of love for other people. And I think we should be fresh to cover that. So we'll cover that tomorrow. It's question six. So don't try to do question six, alright? But in the Yoga Sutra, there's a very beautiful teaching on how to develop true love. Because it's no good to just say, I'm gonna make money, or I'm gonna get strong, or, you know, I wanna have a cute boyfriend forever. You know, but if you don't have love, then what's the point of it, right? If there's not some love going on for other people, then what's the point? You can't be happy unless you have love also. We gotta talk about love also, or this stuff's not gonna, you'll get money, but you won't be happy. It's a different karma. Okay? Or you'll be successful, but you won't be happy. And you won't take care of other people. You need a higher, you need to take this stuff higher. You have to take it into the realm of love. And you have to develop a higher kind of love. So we'll work on that tomorrow. Okay? Christina has all the homeworks, right? The resort was very kind, and I helped. Annie took care of that. Thank you for that. We didn't make enough copies of everything. So if you, well, you better come tomorrow. We'll bring like totally enough copies for everybody tomorrow, and we'll bring a notebook for everybody for tomorrow. But please take a homework, they're over there. Please spend some time on it and do it carefully, okay? If you like, come a little bit early, anytime after 1 o'clock, and there'll be staff here at the restaurant. I'm gonna ask them to wear some kind of a name tag thing, okay? And then you can just sit down with them and say, I didn't understand this part, or I can't answer this part, okay? The exercise of doing the homework will cement the knowledge in your mind, and then you'll be able to teach it really well to other people in your yoga classes or at work or in your family, okay? It doesn't have to be teaching up here. You could be teaching at Starbucks, right? A lot of teaching goes down at Starbucks. Really. But best teaching goes down at Starbucks. So please, please, please do the homework. Because otherwise you won't get much out of this. And you won't remember anything and you won't be able to make anything happen. Please, please do the homework. And you'll find that it's fun. Everybody do the homework. Even if you are staff, even if you are the owner of the resort. Please, please do your... No, because then you will succeed. Something will happen. Okay? Alright? In my business, in diamond business, they say, is it a deal? And we don't have contracts, we don't have lawyers, we're not allowed to take a case to a lawyer. All contracts are verbal in the diamond business. And they're a point of honor. Everything is honor. You give your word, and that's it. You don't even write the deal down. And the word is called mazal. Okay, say mazal.
Mazal.
Mazal is Yiddish, it means mazal hu bracha, health and happiness. But when you say mazal, the deal is done. If you say mazal, you must do the homework. Are you ready? One, two, three.
Mazal.
Okay, good night. Okay, homework's over there. Okay, good night.